Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What makes you happy, media watchers Hayden Donnell?
Kia ora, Emil. What does make me happy? I did not expect that question because I honestly can't think of anything. You know what?
You're a child.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, seeing my little girl smile, but also, like, and my boy, they were both sitting on my knee the other night, mm-hmm. and I was reading something to them. But that, I feel like if I say that, it will paint a misleading picture for my audience of a sort of blissful family life, when most of the time they are driving me insane. Mm. And I don't want to even note the moments of happiness because I feel like it will make the it will give people the impression that I don't have also moments of deep misery.
All right. Well, after that start, let's get to what we're going to talk about on Midweek Media Watch today. And in fact, we start with some really, really, really sad news that we learned today: the death of the journalist and commentator and just a really good bloke, Rod Oram. He was a terrific guy, and this came as quite a shock.
Yes, I thought we shouldn't really start on all the rest of the topics before acknowledging this. And look, I didn't know Rod. I'd actually never met him, but you had, right?
Yeah, I had a bit of a weird kind of thing with Rob where I would talk to him once or twice a year when I hosted The Detail about climate or business stories or whatever. We would talk sort of once or twice in the year and not have much to do with one another, and then we would see each other at the newsroom Christmas party at the end of the year and go off and have a chat, like just a really nice chat. Even though we didn't really know one another that well, we would always have quite really lovely conversations, and then he would head off and disappear, and then I would see him again in sort of 6 months, 8 months. And
that's what it seems like a lot of people had that experience, where he was so deeply courteous and interested in what you were doing and just a genuinely kind person. It's interesting you say The Detail. I saw Alexia Russell, Detail producer. She was one of a number of journalists commenting under the newsroom obituary written by Tim Murphy about Rod, also saying that he was just beloved of The Detail, I guess because he gave such a lot of his time and his expertise. Now, I feel like I'm speaking out of turn because I didn't know him, but everyone that did says that he was a gentleman. And I think it was everyone's really highlighted this mix of two things: absolute passion for his subject, which was climate change, absolute resolute commitment to it, and then that was mixed with this reserve and precision and fairness. And I've only ever really managed the passion side of that equation, so I do respect that. And Jonathan Milne, I saw him saying today that because Rod was a committed Anglican, that he saw the stewardship of the environment and of the natural world as kind of an outworking of his faith in some way, that it was applied Christianity for him in some way. So that's where he was coming from. It was a point of principle for him, of faith, really, that he would try to steward the natural world as best he could in his work. It was more than a vocation for him.
Yeah. Really, really sad, and I think the entire media industry in New Zealand will miss Rod a lot, and thoughts are very much with his family and friends, and he's a guy who had many, 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 many friends for good reason.
Absolutely, and his final column, he was actually talking about he was going to rethink his way of covering things. He was talking about the enormous and likely irreversible damage we're doing to the natural world. He was saying he's going to write a monthly column, and that will actually be his last column. It's really sad that he will not be, we won't be seeing him reshape his work in that way.
Thank you for that, Hayden. It was good to talk about that at the top. So let's talk a bit more about the media. And we will begin with the question of how to cover Winston Peters. Last few days, media's taken a bit of a beating from Winston Peters' State of the Nation speech this weekend. He compared, I think, co-governance to Nazism, and that got many headlines. But he also spent a lot more of that speech just criticising the media more broadly.
Yeah, that was the headline that was drawn out of it. The speech was almost about the media. Yeah, we're finally going to crack how to cover Winston Peters. It's going to happen tonight, Emil. Finally. Even in that bit about co-governance, comparing it to Nazi Germany, that was actually really embedded in a criticism of the media. So here's what he was saying immediately beforehand.
Everywhere, manipulated. No manifesto coverage, no campaign, just under the radar, dirt of this type. And what were the media saying about it?
Nothing.
Deafening zero. And ladies and gentlemen, we're never going to make it out of this demise if we tolerate that sort of behaviour.
He went on from that to co-governance, and the whole speech was really this laundry list of grievance against the media. There was apparently more than 30 total complaints about the media, according to Politic, and I picked out just one. There was this one about an RNZ interview on the campaign trail.
I was being interviewed by RNZ in the campaign last year. Now it's like, how's this for neutrality? When this interviewer says about our candidates, where do you get these people? How do you like that? What would have anybody sitting there with producers behind her and the ownership of RNZ thinking that could possibly be an acceptable approach to an interview where neutrality was the key issue? Well, she found out in the end where we got them from, and we're on the rise and they're on the dive.
So, yeah, they're on the rise, we're on the dive. No idea what interview he's referring to there, but obviously it left a long-lasting impression.
I know the one. That was an interview that he did with Ingrid on Morning Report. I remember listening to that live.
Right.
And it was rather tempestuous, it's fair to say. But the media bashing has indeed continued apace over the last few days. It wasn't just State of the Nation stuff.
No, not just the comparing co-governance to Nazism, that kind of hostility over that. Now the British band Chumbawamba is involved, as happens with every good New Zealand political scandal. The spin-off and staff broke the news that Chumbawamba was issuing a cease and desist order to New Zealand First over its use of their hit song Tub Thumping before Peter's State of the Nation address, and he tweeted that the story had been initiated by a lefty shill reporter and no such order had been sent. He later clarified that he was talking about the spin-off reporter there, not Stuff's Tover O'Brien, who also was breaking the story. But then, on Breakfast This Morning, he was expanding his net for lefty shill reporters. He was saying that lefty shill reporters apparently were influencing the Prime Minister himself and misinforming Chris Luxon about what Winston Peters had actually said about co-governance and the Nazis during his State of the Nation address. Today he walked past a scrum of reporters playing Chumbawamba on his phone or some sort of audio device. Look, it's all a bit unseemly, to be honest, Emil. On the plus side, it's generated one of the more memorable press release headlines in New Zealand political history, and that's the words, Right Honourable Winston Peters, - statement on Chumbawamba media inquiry. Something that you never have expected.
What do you make of this? Do you see this as a political technique to play to the base, which has a scepticism of the mainstream media? What?
Yes, I do. I don't know whether it's some sort of like well-planned, well-executed thing. It almost seems instinctual to me, but it's been the way that Peters has operated for years and years and years. In fact, John Campbell, he gave a revealing analogy about this on One News, its website, last year, and he recounted a lesson that Peters gave him early in his career. He's getting on a little bit, so that's quite some decades ago. And it was during the air break of a hostile interview, and Winston Peters took Campbell aside and he said, you know, the more he seems at odds with the mainstream media, the more his voters like him. And John Campbell then realised that an oppositional interview confers upon him the status of outsider, the maverick, the whistleblower, someone speaking truth to power. And journalists, however much we don't like this, are seen as a power centre by some people.
I mean, that's interesting. A lot of people, I find this comparison a bit lazy, but a lot of people would say a lot of those adjectives would apply to, you know, Donald Trump, the sort of the maverick, the enemy of the fourth estate, to the mainstream media who are telling you lies and so on and so forth. But you can see the parallels there in a way.
I can see that some of the tactics are the same. Mm. And it goes with a big disclaimer, because as you say, it's lazy. Their political positions they're very different.
And the wider political environments are totally different from one another as well, right?
And I can't see, for instance, Donald Trump lambasting the 80s and 90s neoliberal reforms and their excesses of capitalism, for instance, as Winston Peters did in that same State of the Nation address. He's always got these two sides to him, where he has this kind of, he always talks about what the horrors that capitalism has wrought, and it's done overkill, and then he will often reject any efforts to reform capitalism as well. So it's a little bit of a weird position that he finds himself in. But the thing about being a maverick, I think that is comparable to Trump. He's kind of like the Trump before Trump. He's the proto-Trump, the larval Trump. I don't know. He plays himself up as a maverick truth teller that the establishment is trying to hold back and censor, and they're not telling you about me, and they're not telling you about my positions, and they just want to keep me down, but I'm on your side. And that's the same thing that Trump does. And that... It's interesting because it leaves the media in kind of a bind, doesn't it? Because if you do start going, this isn't right what you said here about the Nazis and co-governance, if you scrutinize him and his more inflammatory statements, it kind of just adds to the narrative. It tends to feed into the us against them sort of impression he's trying to leave. So it's the same as Trump in that he uses this maverick persona almost as a shield, and it inoculates him to normal accountability in some ways.
There are other ways that Winston Peters' relationship with the media is maybe a bit similar to Trump's as well. In both cases, they may disapprove of his actions, but as you say, it's good for business.
Yeah. There was a really interesting example of this on Newstalk ZB this week from Andrew Dickens. And I think it just really encapsulates the point. So he started off doing an editorial. He said, Winston, beyond the pale, he's gone too far. This is not just Winston being Winston. He condemns him. So here's that clip.
You could just sit back and go, there we go again. That's just Winston. But we've been saying that's just Winston since 1979. Every now and then you have to say that being just Winston is often not good enough. Those lines, that Nazi thing, I thought was well below the standard that you have set, Winston. I have great respect for you. You are a senior statesman. You're good at your stuff. You're a pro. What are you doing?
So that was that, and then this is literally immediately afterwards. This is him immediately afterwards introducing his chat with political editor Jason Walls.
CNBC's political editor is Jason Walls. Hello, Jason.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank God for Winston, though. It gives us something to talk about every Monday.
Appalling. Disgraceful. Great material, though. So that's Peters thrown through. That's Donald Trump thrown through for the media, right? Because, yeah, you might think it's disgraceful. It might be beyond the pale, but also gives us something to talk about. Fills up the headlines. Gives us clicks. So there's that going on.
Gives us a midweek media watch topic.
Gives us a midweek media watch. Look, we're just as bad. I'm not condemning Andrew Dickens here.
Like, no, I understand.
There
were lots of things that were good for the media. Lots of things that are bad for society more broadly are good for the media business.
Exactly.
I don't mean to suggest there that Winston Peters is bad for society. What I mean is,
I wanted to add a disclaimer.
Indeed,
But I did wonder whether it kind of undermines any of that disapproval, because obviously you're getting something out of the arrangement. You're getting headlines and clicks and stuff like that, even if it's not fair. That should undermine it. I feel like what Andrew Dickens was saying was completely genuine. But then maybe there's this kind of love him, hate him thing that makes people think, well, you're getting something out of this arrangement, and makes them not take your disapproval so seriously.
I mean, he clearly feels in many cases that he is treated unfairly by the media.
Yes.
Do you think that there is any merit to that perspective?
Yeah, I just don't. I'm not a Peters whisperer. I don't really know what's happening. I thought Richard Harman of Politic, he was interesting because he said at the State of the Nation, he was more bitter and more aggrieved than he'd seen him before. Richard Harman's been around for some decades. I think there is a sense that it is an act because, like any pugilist, he needs that opponent. Like any maverick, he needs something to rail against. And so he spends his entire time berating the media, but he needs that media to be powerful in order to actually have an establishment figure to rail against. And so he appreciates the media in some ways. And I think there was, in some ways, it was telling that when News Hub announced its closure, he was far more mournful about it than some of his allies in the National Party. So here he is, actually, this is a statement on that.
A critical part of any democracy and free society is a fourth estate, an independent fourth estate. And I'm concerned about where we're going now.
That's interesting. That was just a week or two ago, right? And now he's saying, well, we're on the rise and they're on the dive. So it's kind of the duality of man going on here. And it's not just me saying that. Apparently, allies of Peter's openly say the same thing to the media, that, oh, it's just rhetoric, it's just Winston being Winston. And that's what Jason Walls actually expanded on to Andrew Dickens on Newstalk ZB.
I will say that it was quite good to watch him in full flight, even though he was very mean to us at the media at the back. We tend to not really care what he says anymore at this point about us, because afterwards it's all smiles and laugh, and his campaign staff will look at us, or his staff will look at us and kind of say things like, oh, it's just Winston, it's just rhetoric at the end of the day. So he's doing it for the base, and we all know that.
Oh, well, just for show then. It is quite extraordinary, right, that you have a politician where their allies will openly say to the media, oh, he was just being disingenuous there, don't take it seriously, and it won't even merit a passing remark. Oh, it'll merit a passing remark like that, but it won't be a scandal or anything like that.
We talked to Laura Walters from Newsroom a bit about this last night, and we should move on to other subjects in a second, but and something that came through in the correspondence, and a question that I put to Laura was with regard to that unfairness point that I asked you about before. You know, Winston Peters has said, when it comes to that Nazi Germany remark, that he was commenting there on the Māori Party co-leader Rāwhiti Waititi's previous comments about Māori having quote-unquote superior genetics. And, you know, it has been raised by many, you know, right-leaning commentators that particularly when Te Pāti Māori has made really inflammatory remarks in the past as well. Te Pinga Ruapeka, for example, saying, I'm a descendant of a people who survived the Holocaust, describing the reversal of smoke-free policies as systemic genocide. And perhaps raising the idea that maybe Winston Peters feels as though his remarks, because he's Winston Peters, are treated more uncharitably by the media, and that comments by other politicians, members of parliament, are not condemned in the same way. Like, what do you?
Yeah, I wonder. I don't. I feel like I'm stepping on eggshells here. Maybe there could be, there could be more scrutiny of those sorts of comments. I think it is. The Māori Party is an indigenous party that is representing the interests of a colonised people that have been subject to huge historical injustices. Obviously, Winston Peters is Māori as well, but he's not speaking from that perspective in this case. He's talking about a rather benign, started under John Key, government program of sort of co-governance and comparing it to Nazi Germany. So the reaction is different there. I do see them as quite distinct things. I don't know whether I could get a ruler out and say they're always treated equally by the media, and everything that he says is true. I suspect that the media doesn't particularly enjoy going up against Winston Peters necessarily. It's not necessarily a pleasurable experience. It often ends up with them getting berated for several weeks and experiencing quite a lot of harassment online. So I don't know if it's something that they're doing just out of the love of love of it.
What do you think is the best way journalistically to handle or to talk to Winston Peters? You know, is Jason Walls right there to laugh it off and, you know, you're above it? That signals that the whole thing's for show? Or does that sort of normalise this kind of rhetoric, do you reckon?
I don't know. To be fair to Jason, maybe, because that neutralizes the Maverick thing and the, well, you're just out to get him thing. Oh, well, we're laughing it off. It's all for show. We know it's all for show. So it neutralizes that. But at the same time, not taking people that say quite outrageous things seriously, as we've seen, to bring him up again, Donald Trump, if we don't take them seriously, well, actually, serious things can happen. And this is the Deputy Prime Minister of New Zealand. The things that he says, his pronouncements, should be taken seriously. They come with a huge amount of power behind them. I thought one person who handled it, at least in an interesting way, and maybe the best way that I've seen recently, was Jack Tame in the lead up to the election last year. Mm. And so it was a really interesting interview where Jack Tame had all these facts at his hand. Winston Peters actually ended up, it was made the tactic very explicit. He literally eyeballed the camera and spoke directly to the audience rather than the interviewer to make that I'm talking over your head to the people behind you thing very explicit. And Jack Tame also narrated exactly what Peters was doing. So here he is doing that.
I think we all understand the tactic. You come in here, you huff and puff and hurl insults around. I get it. For people at home, it might be entertaining. These are serious times worthy of serious leadership. If you are unable to answer straight questions about your policy, your competence and your integrity... That's on you.
The hey, poor, poor matter has been out there for months. It's all been answered. No one's arguing, excepting Jack Tame and TVNZ.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that was an interesting interview. I'd encourage people to go back and watch it on the Q&A YouTube channel or even the One News app. I don't know. The thing is, not every interview has the level of preparation that Q&A does. It doesn't have the breathing room. It doesn't have the amount of facts that you can throw at them. So to say that that's a template for everyone, maybe it's not. It's a hard problem. Mm. If it wasn't, then probably someone would have solved it in the time between now and 1979.
Let's get on to something else. And you wanted to correct the record of somebody you have described many times as RNZ's wrongest employee.
Yeah, that's RNZ's Colin Peacock, my boss at Media Watch, mm-hmm. of course. Botched it again. Last week's midweek Media Watch, he said that following the July 7 UK bombing, John Charles Dominguez was shot by police after jumping a barrier in the London Underground. However, that original claim was from the police. It was incorrect. He had actually used his Oyster card to pay the fare. Now, a Japan-based listener wrote in to tell us this and to point out that we were wrong. And as he mentioned, it really just goes to show that media should be really careful about reporting unverified claims, even if they come from police or government in the immediate aftermath of a major news event. Also, should be careful about re-reporting those same claims 2 decades later on Media Watch, Colin Peacock.
I like that word, careful.
Careful. I thought it really rolled off the tongue, to be honest.
It's a cromulent word.
Yeah. Cromulent from The Simpsons. I assume that RNZ listeners know that, actually. Hey?
I love that you felt the need to explain that.
I don't know. I felt maybe there's a Gen Z person out there that didn't get it.
Yeah, Gen Z don't all watch The Simpsons.
They probably haven't even heard of it.
Weird, eh? Mm. Speaking of internal Media Watch disputes, you wanted to discuss a reporting decision from Stuff's Tova O'Brien that's caused a bit of a ruction in your team.
Yes. Two opinions on this in Media Watch. Tova O'Brien, if you didn't know, she bailed Chris Luxon up, that's a bit of a pun there, I think, at the Central District's field days, and he agreed to a pull-aside interview. It had a few juicy moments, but the one that really generated a bit of discussion was a hot mic moment, this one, from the end of the interview.
Prime Minister, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Okay,
cheers.
Bye.
Take care.
Oh, yeah. That's it, tabloid stuff from Stuff. Good on you.
That was a hot mic. He did not know that his mic was still on, and Tova O'Brien and Stuff decided to air it.
Yeah, that was, and that's an interesting editorial decision. I mean, you mentioned that there are differing perspectives on the airing of this clip in the Media Watch team. What's your perspective?
My perspective, fair enough. Colin, he says, well, I probably wouldn't have aired it. He thought it was maybe a little bit unfair, doesn't need to. It wasn't that newsworthy that he said that. It wasn't like Wayne Brown, for instance, saying that he would stick pictures of Simon Wilson to the urinal at council on a hot mic for News Hub Nation last year. It wasn't on that level. For me, I reckon go to town.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. there are so few moments from politicians that are unscripted and candid. We so rarely get to hear what they really think of something. And especially someone like Luxon that really sticks to his lines. Look, I welcome any skerrick of genuine imparting of information or feeling from these kinds of politicians that are meant to be public figures that are accountable to us. So, look, I'm fine with it. What do you think, Emil?
I'm with you on that. I'm fine with it. And I don't even think that what Christopher Luxon says there is especially sort of really, really nasty and mean. I think that Stuff and Tover and every single journalist and media outlet in the country would have had less flattering words said about them in their reporting in the past.
And Tover in her podcast essentially says that. She goes, look, you to the listeners, she said, lots of you may agree with him right now. We're just showing you what he said. Look, I think that we should hear what they really think. We hardly ever do.
Do you remember that clip years and years ago of, I think it was Gordon Brown, the then UK Prime Minister, who did an interview with, I think, Sky News and had a hot mic on and forgot to take it off and got into his cab with a political advisor of him and said, oh, he'd been talking to one of his constituents and he got into the cab and said, oh, thank God we got away from that bigoted woman. And they recorded that and played it on the program as well. And, I mean, as you say, there are a few, many politicians are extremely media trained to stay on message. Mm. And there are a few moments that would take many politicians by total surprise where they would be totally off guard. This is one of them. This is how it works.
I think we should know our real politicians and what they really think as much as possible. That's the media's job, so I'm fine with it. There is the issue, though, of is this going to mean that you hear less from them? Are they going to be more guarded? Long-term. Is it going to break the trust, you know? I can see that a little bit. Long-term, is it actually worse for accountability? Maybe, but that would require me to agree with Colin Peacock. I'm simply not going to do it. I'm going to say that he's wrong and they were right.
Finally this evening, the Spinos, Madeleine Holden, has done a pretty chastening piece of work about the number of journalists and journalism jobs there are left in Aotearoa, Hayden.
Yeah, really depressing, but also impressive work from Madeleine Holden, diligent. She basically contacted every newsroom in the country and asked them how many people work for them. Long story short, there are now 1,674 people working in journalism. That will go down to 1,439 if News Hub closes and TVNZ goes through with its proposed cuts. That's not good.
No.
I'll say that's not good, but just to put it in context, there were 4,000 journalism jobs in 2006. So that was when the population was 4.1 million. We now have 5.1 million people. So we have roughly 60% fewer journalists and we're covering 25% more people. Spread pretty thin now.
Is there any hope for this industry, I suppose?
So it's a tough one to figure out in the next, I'm just looking at the clock, 2 minutes time. It will retrench. There will be things that survive. There will be niche publications, business desks, substacks, you know, independent and niche publications. There will be some majors, but I think the ubiquitous, all-powerful mainstream media funded by advertising, I can't see that surviving in its current form. It's just not coming back. Mm. And that is a bit of a problem because people are increasingly getting their news from social media and it's not a good fill-in. As it turns out, the media does fulfill a really vital democratic role, holding power to account, filtering out the truth from the lies. And social media doesn't filter out the truth from the lies. In fact, it elevates the lies because they're engaging. So Duncan Grieve called the survival of the media or the media's funding model for the last century or so a happy accident. Mm. I think that that's kind of true. The fact that it was able to be funded by ads is kind of, it was lucky. Mm. But it can't really just be allowed to fail like other industries, I think, because of that democratic function. It's not just the horse and cart. It's one of the foundational parts of your democracy. So, yes, we probably have to look at ways to find it, to keep some parts of it running.
Hayden Donnell, thank you very much. As always, nice to have you in.
Thank you so much, Emil.
And Hayden and Media Watch will, of course, be back on Sunday with a new episode of that most excellent show here on RNZ National.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.